Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, good afternoon, and welcome to the Trouble with the Snap podcast. I am Tyler Hayward with Jeremy File. Obviously, we've got a lot to get to today. It is hate week from Michigan and Michigan State basketball. Obviously, we're going to talk a little bit about the Michigan football game as well. It about went as Jeremy expected, and he is with us. We also got a special guest coming on here in a few. But Jeremy, let's just dive right into it. Let's talk a little bit about the Michigan football game against Alabama. I think you were about as close as anybody in regards to the score. What were some of your takeaways?
Well, yes, I'd like to pat myself on the back for the score prediction. I was pretty close, but I'm sure there was a lot of people out there that had a very similar approach that I did. I mean, look, let's just be honest. I think we all kind of knew. I mean, Alabama was too talented. We knew that coming in. We knew that it was going to be an uphill battle. And I think that, you know, I made the statement to you, Tyler. I said, look, fourth quarter, let's keep it close. And they did. I mean, they did what they needed to do to keep the game close going into the fourth. And to be honest, the only thing that Jim Harbaugh has said that is smart this year is probably after they lost to Wisconsin, we got outcoached, outplayed everything. And the second best thing he's ever said as a coach was, we pretty much were in the game until the last 6 minutes, because they were. I mean, they really were, shockingly. After the first touchdown, let's be honest, I think we all kind of just felt like, you know, this is going to get bad. I mean, we kind of had that view. And Michigan settled down. They played really well. There's a lot of positive. I mean, there's a lot of things you can look at with young players stepping up. Giles Jackson, Sanders still played well. Charbonnet and Haskins are going to be very good in the backfield. There's a couple offensive linemen that could be back that played well. I thought the defense settled down with young guys, Cam McGrone. But let's just be honest, the expectation, Tyler, is really, really high here. And I think it's ridiculous that people are saying all the things they're saying after losing to Bama. But at the same time, that's just what you get at Michigan. And I don't know even know if it's fair, to be quite honest, because, you know, you lose to Alabama by 19 points. And because of a last drive that Nick Saban wanted to punch it in, that really room to even go after Harbaugh more. I think it's just been a lot of different things that have happened there. And I'm going to be really honest with you, Tyler. I'd be surprised if we don't hear Harbaugh firing talk all off season as usual.
Yeah, I mean, and ultimately, I think the biggest loss this week, they lost a key recruiter to Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss. I honestly think that's the biggest loss. Look, I thought Michigan played great. I was shocked at how they were moving the ball. And I get that this is not, you know, Alabama. But it's still Alabama, and the way the offensive line pushed them around. Yeah, it was really impressive.
Jerry Judy's pretty good. Yeah, how about Jerry Judy?
No, I'm saying the way Michigan's offensive line pushed around the defensive front for Alabama, that was something that I did not see coming.
No, and I think that was something that absolutely – I thought that would be a big problem. I thought that their defensive line would get to the quarterback quicker. I thought we would have a non-existent run game. I mean, talk about the run game. I mean, why did we go away from it? I mean, that was the one thing that all of us armchair coaches were sitting here with our big bellies out saying that we were all right. I mean, why were we not running the football? But I think these are the things that you're going to get, Tyler. I mean, we've talked about this for how long? It's like beating a dead horse. Harbaugh, this is what you're going to get. I mean, it's puzzling at times. You know, it looks really good at times. They look like a really good football team sometimes. And then there's other times when you go, man, I don't know what the game plan is. We listen to other shows and, you know, we dive into this stuff. We're sports fanatics, right, Tyler? I mean, when I listen to 97.1 The Ticket, you know, I don't love every episode of that show, but Mike Filani had a great point the other day. He said, what does Harbaugh do? What does he do that makes him a great coach? And I said, wow, you know, this goofball actually has a point. I mean, you know, he's not a great play caller. He's not, like, a great recruiter. And, you know, when that gentleman said, I'm sitting there thinking, wow, he's got a point. What does Jim, and I ask you, Tyler, what does he do that makes you go, oh, man, elite coach? And I know you've had a lot of things to say about him, but what does he do? I mean, really, what does he do?
No, and I mean, that's kind of what I've been saying all year long. It's one of those situations where, now, there's different scales to this, so don't think I'm comparing the three and putting Jim Harbaugh in the class with the other two, okay? It is no different than when Rich Rodriguez was at Michigan and when Brady Hoke was at Michigan. Now, obviously, Michigan's winning more. They're recruiting better talent. But what I mean by that is you are beating the teams that you are supposed to beat on a talent level. You sit there and you look at other teams' rosters and you're like, oh, man, Jack Cohn's pretty decent. You know, Steph is okay. That defense is brutal, and obviously Jonathan Taylor. Yeah, Michigan doesn't really have a shot, and they go out there and they get blown out. That's what happens. You know, there is no upsets. There's no, Michigan State's little string of success, their 5-6 year string under D'Antonio, where they were a top five program nationally. You sit there and you look at that. They got a couple of those upsets. You know, they beat Ohio State occasionally. Jim Harbaugh possesses kind of the same attitude, or he's giving you the same results Hoke and Rich Rod did, in that he is beating the teams that he is supposed to beat. He's getting better recruits, and so they're beating more teams than what Hoke and Rich Rod did, but he's not getting them to that next level. And, I mean, sure, none of their coaches have – really done that even since, you know, the last couple of years of the Lloyd Carr era.
Yeah, no, there's no question. I think there's levels to average, but the special guest we have on the show now who just tuned in is not average, that's for sure. And I'm going to let my Spartan colleague introduce him. So Tyler, go ahead, let us know, let the public know who the special guest is today.
All right, joining us today we have a former Michigan State basketball player who has played in the Final Four. He is one of the most sought-after speakers in the entire country, man. Travels coast to coast. Fantastic at what he does. He currently has a special project coming out. We're going to talk to him a little bit about that. Obviously talk to him about the rivalry since he was a part of it. And we're also going to talk very briefly about how he swept me in fantasy football. Anthony Iani, former Spartan Dog, is with us today. Anthony, how you doing, man?
Gentlemen, I'm doing good. Happy New Year to you both.
Happy New Year to you too. Yeah. So me and AI were beefing a little bit about this whole fantasy football thing. I've ran my mouth a lot over the last 2 years, and he, along with pretty much everybody else, kind of put me in my place this year. And so I'm still a little salty, but, you know, I'll get past it. Anthony, look, let's get started. You're obviously doing the public speaking thing, and we know that you don't want to give away too much. You'll just tell us to buy the book, but you are working on a book project as well right now, correct?
Yep. So right now where we're at in the process, Tyler, is, I signed with a literary agency back in June this past summer, and so right now the process has been just trying to find a publisher and editor who wants to take on the book, and basically we're just trying to find a home for it. So the book itself is all done. Like, that was completed a little over a year ago. So, I mean, we've just been in the process the whole time of just trying to find, you know, first it was trying to find an agent to represent it. Then we found one, and now our agent's just trying to reach out to other editors and publishers to see who's going to take it on. So I can tell you right now, the process has been, it's been very interesting. It's been frustrating, and it's been, it's been an interesting experience thus far. But like I said, the frustrating part is because, you know, you want your book to get published now. You want somebody to take it on because you know you have a good story. You know you have a good message to tell. But at the same time, it's like my buddy, one of my former teammates and roommates at Grand Valley State told me, you know, you can't rush greatness. And so that's kind of been my mindset with the whole, you know, process during the book, is that, you know, you can't rush greatness. You know, somebody's going to take this book on, somebody's going to publish it, and it's going to be a big time deal. So that's where I stand right now with the book. So as soon as it comes out, as soon as I get a publisher, I mean, you guys are definitely going to be knowing, you know, because I'm going to put it all over social media as soon as I get a deal done.
Awesome. Yeah. And look, it's no different than with, like, movies in some aspect. You know, everyone thinks, oh, hey, look, they're done shooting. This thing's going to get pushed out. No, sometimes they bounce around company to company after that. And, you know, sometimes they end up hooking up a deal with the company, and then that folds, they end up going somewhere else. And, you know, some of those movies, the classics, the Christmas classics, even like Die Hard, something like that, you know, that got bounced around a little bit.
Tyler's
so
favorite.
He had to
mention Die Hard.
I did. But look, what I mean, without going into too much, because obviously, you know, we're here to try to push this process a little bit. What is the book about, now?
So the book is about, you know, my life story, growing up with autism, and how I've transitioned to where I'm at today. So for a lot of people who have either seen my story from the, you know, NBA's Beyond the Paint documentary series last year, or anybody who's seen my videos on YouTube about anti-bullying, like, you know, people who have heard my presentations before, Tyler, like, they've only heard, like, a little bit of my life. Like, they haven't heard, like, the full detailed version of it, which is exactly what the book is about. So basically, from when I was born to my diagnosis to my days in elementary school, middle school, Okemos High School, my playing days at Grand Valley State, Michigan State, and to where I'm at today, like, they're all going to hear, I mean, everybody's going to read what happened and basically what went on in my life. And, you know, one of the things that I can just throw out there to you guys is that, you know, I put some of my IEPs in there, my individualized education plan comments, from people who kind of ran those meetings and had their opinions on me when I was a young student. And so those are in the book as well, because, you know, I want to show parents and kids and young adults who are affected by autism, who are on the autism spectrum, to show them that, you know, this is what was said about me as a young kid, and I'm in the same boat as you. So don't feel like you're left alone. And basically, it's just a book of hope and inspiration to those who need it, and to those who need to find an inspiration. And I mean, as you know, Tyler, I mean, you followed my career for a while. I mean, it's also an underdog story too. And, you know, it's for people who really get into underdog sports stories, and for people who really enjoy those type of, those motivational stories as well.
Well, Anthony, I want to, you know, tell you, number one, I'm inspired. I mean, we've had some great people on the show, and Tyler, he could be the one that takes all the credit for that, because I'm the odd Wolverine over here. But I'll say this, your story is inspiring. I mean, I've met a lot of Spartan players, played against them. And the one thing I got from it is it is an underdog story. I mean, I remember doctors telling me I would never play competitive sports again. People like to hear that stuff. I got to ask you, though, because I tried to do a little bit of public speaking. And have you had a moment, because you're a person that goes through adversity and gets through it, have you ever had a moment in speaking where you were like, ooh, this is a rough one today. This is, how do I get through this one today? Like, this is a tough day for me speaking, because it is not easy. People do not realize, anyone to be in front of a group of people and speak, it is terrifying. Have you ever had that moment, like a couple times, where you're like, how am I going to get through this one today? I got to fight through it.
There have been times where I've asked myself that question, because I mean, I'm on the road at most 5 days a week in a different school, a different town, like every day. And now with 2020 here, you know, I'm going to be ramping up more out of state stuff in Wisconsin, Texas, Nebraska. You know, I actually just got asked to speak at one of the biggest autism conferences in Asia next year in Macau, China, in April. So my out of state stuff's really going to be ramping up here pretty soon. But, you know, there are days where, you know, I may not sleep well at night because I got so much on my mind. So I may sleep like 4 hours, and then I'm up at like 6 a.m., you know, and then I'm on the road at 6:30 to head to the next school or next town, you know, from my house. And it's like, oh man, like, you know, how am I going to get through this? You know, but I always ask the question to myself is, you know, what are your whys? You know, why do you do what you love to do? And my whys have always been to inspire people, whether it's just one person at a school, because as long as I inspire one person everywhere I go, then my job is done, you know, because I don't want to put all the pressure of you need to inspire all 500 students at this elementary school in Saline, Michigan today. Like, you need to inspire all 2,700 students in Novi High School a day. Like, you have to do that. No, like, you know, at first when I got into this profession, like, that was kind of like the goal at first, was to inspire everybody. But then I learned to realize that I wasn't going to impress everybody. I wasn't going to hit as many people as I would like to. But, like, I figured out that as long as I inspired one person, that's all it takes, because that's all it takes in life is inspire one. But, like, there have been presentations where I've been to schools that – I mean, I was at Detroit Mumford High School about five and a half years ago. And I could tell you right now, that was probably – like, first of all, I was supposed to present to an all-freshman class. And then the power went out, and so they had to cancel the freshman presentation, and they put me in a cafeteria with a mix of sophomores, juniors, and seniors that had no idea who I was, no idea what I was speaking on. And, like, the first 20 minutes was a bit of a hostile environment because these students had no idea what they were getting into. They had no idea what was going on because of the power outage. But once they started, you know, listening to the message and what I was doing, like, everything was cool, calm, and collective after that. But I had some out-of-town folks who came in to watch me speak, and they said, you know, how you handled that crowd for the first 20 minutes was pretty darn impressive. Because the other thing I do too, you guys, is that, and I don't do this at elementary schools, I usually do it at middle schools and high schools, is that if there's a student that gets out of hand during my presentation, who wants to interrupt my presentation, who wants to talk when I talk, like, I handle it personally. Like, I take care of it. Like, I tell the principal, like, hey, like, are you okay with me handling this if a student does this? And the principal's like, yeah, you know, do what you got to do. And so I will call out a kid if anybody's ever disrupting my presentation, because I also kind of treat presentations like my classroom. You know, I kind of treat it like an educator. Like, I'm teaching these kids. I'm trying to preach to them. And if a student gets out of hand, like, I'm not afraid to call them out on it, because it's the lesson that they need to remember of, hey, 20 years from now, if you make the same mistake that you do with your boss that you just did with me, you know, what's going to happen to you? And, you know, worst case scenario is that person could get fired from their job. And so, but the fact that I'm able to just wake up every day, have a great love and passion for what I do, you know, that's what really carries me, you know, through good days and especially, you know, down days in my life for presentations, is that my passion for this is the same passion I had at Michigan State for basketball and for Michigan State University. It's a passion that can never be outdone. It's a passion that, you know, is going to stick with me for the rest of my life. So my passion and love for what I do is what really gets me through the tough days as well.
Let me just say, you know, obviously we appreciate what all you do. And to a point, I mean, you know, some of those disruptive kids, you know, they're kind of why you're doing what you're doing as well, because it's an anti-bullying concept that kind of carries through. And so, you know, obviously, you know, I've mentioned it to you numerous times how, you know, you kind of inspire me at the same time. And, you know, obviously we'll talk more about this, and I'm sure we'll have you on again to, you know, when your book does get published and when you are rocking and rolling with that. But we're going to dive into a little bit of basketball here. And, you know, obviously we're going to start at, you know, Michigan State. You know, we're having you on. It is Michigan State week. And you're always one of our favorite guests because you don't really hide your disdain for Michigan. But looking at Michigan State, you know, they had a lot of issues kind of early on in the season. It looks like it's kind of solid right now in regards to their bigs in that playing rotation. You know, it started with Kithier, then it turned to Hall, then Bingham, and then back to Hall, then now it's back. It looks like it's back to Bingham right now. You know, you played that position for the Spartans. What is that like, you know, for a guy like Izzo, who normally it looks like he has a structured plan, a structured way of going, and he's having a hard time trying to pinpoint that fifth starter?
You know, for coaches, I mean, and this is why he's so good at what he does, is that he experiments with different lineups. And just to see, you know, who could play well on defense, who could play well on offense, who could give me a good, you know, 4 or 5 minute burst, you know, for, you know, a 6 man off the bench type of guy. And so, I mean, I know that it frustrated fans a little bit because, you know, first it was Kithier, now we go back to Bingham, now it's Hall, now it's back to Bingham, you know, and now we're just playing chess now, you know, it's this piece, now this piece. It's like, So he knew what he was doing. And I think in the long run, I think I had a pretty good idea that Marcus Bingham was going to be the guy going forward because, I mean, number one, he's 6'11" with a 7'5", 7'6" wingspan. I mean, and last night was a perfect example of how his length can be very effective on defense. And, you know, last night also proved that, you know, Marcus Bingham doesn't need to score 15, 20 points a game for us to win. Like, if he's getting six blocks, you know, four to five blocks a game, plus like 12 rebounds a game because of his defense, like, you know, Coach Izzo is going to take that all day. And I think he knew that, you know, he knows that in the long run now, that Marcus's defense is going to be huge for us, you know, as a team going forward. Because, you know, there's that old saying, defense wins championships. And so our defense is going to be superb moving forward against teams like Michigan, like Ohio State, like Maryland, especially when we get, you know, to these tough road games as well. That defense is going to have to be the thing that is going to lead us going forward. So, and Coach Izzo knows that. And, you know, Thomas Kithier, TK, he's going to continue to do his thing. He's going to continue to be Mr. Hustle on both ends of the floor. You know, he's going to do his job. And I was telling one of my buddies this last night, you know, this team is starting to gel together because everybody's starting to find their role now. Everybody's getting their confidence up. I mean, you see Foster Lawyer, you know, starting for Cassius, you know, against Western Michigan. He comes out, he has 16, 18 points, and now his shot's starting to fall. He's getting a little bit of a swagger going now that he had when he was at Clarkson. So, you know, once we knew everybody found their role and starts to click, I mean, this is going to be the team that everybody expected, you know, us to be in the beginning. And I think, you know, losing Langford and then the Joey Hauser, you know, situation, I mean, obviously that has a major impact on a team in general, especially from a chemistry standpoint, because you expect one of those guys to play during the year. And the fact that we don't have any of those guys, I think it really took a toll on a lot of guys on the team. And so, but, you know, luckily the Christmas break came around the corner and now guys were able to kind of just gel together, enjoy each other's company and, you know, and really build that chemistry. So, but, you know, that's all on Coach Izzo too, because he tells those guys, you know, get to know each other better, you know, hang out with each other, go to the movies. And, you know, I probably would guess for a fact that that's what those guys did. They were hanging out together a lot, whether it was in the film room or, you know, at dinners or in movies, you know, just getting to know each other. And that's what really makes, you know, teams in Michigan gel and make them get going, is the time they spend with each other during this time of year.
So, Anthony, you were a walk-on, correct, at Michigan State?
Yep, and then my senior year, I put on a full scholarship.
Wow. So the great thing, and another reason I'm inspired by, you know, personally for me, you know, I was a preferred walk-on at Western Michigan. And, you know, I was actually very close to signing with Ferris State. So we have a little bit of similarities there. Talk about this, though, because a lot of people don't understand this. And I was listening to Izzo talk about you, how he was never going to treat you differently. Besides all the things you've went through, you know, growing up, the fact that when you were there, you might be a walk-on, but you're the same as everyone else. And I was fortunate enough to meet Anthony Hamill, who was a walk-on, who told me the struggles that it was as a walk-on. Hey, you're just like everybody else. You better play really, really well. Did you ever have that time playing for Izzo where you're like, oh, boy, yeah, this is real. This guy is not going to let me slip up. He is going to go at me. And do you remember that first time where you're like, wow, this is serious. I am playing for Tom Izzo, and, yeah, he's the real deal.
Yeah, it was actually my very first practice we had at Michigan State the year after I transferred from Grand Valley State. And, you know, I was kind of looking for a backdoor pass, I think. It was either to Isaiah Dahlman or Darrell Summers. And, you know, they didn't cut backdoor, and I threw the pass. And obviously I turned it over, and Coach Izzo just ran up to me and just, like, said, what the heck was that pass? I'm like, and I told him I was trying to do. And he's like, you know, no, you, it doesn't matter what you were trying to do. Like, it wasn't there. And, you know, you can't be playing this Division II ball stuff here at Michigan State, AI. Like, you gotta be better than that. And I was like, oh,
was
man.
Choice
was
words
like,
used? Were there some choice words too? I mean, there had to have been some choice words as well.
Well, I gave you the PG version of it. that's when I knew right there and then, you know, because obviously it was my life dream and goal to play for Michigan State and let alone be on scholarship there. But, you know, that's when I knew, okay, this is real. Like, this is where you're at. And, you're part of the program now. You are part of the tradition here now. And so, and that's the other thing too, is like, you know, walk-ons have a very, very important role. And, you know, my role my senior year was I was captain of our scout team. And, I mean, Coach Izzo gave me that duty, gave me that role. Like, you know, you're going to help run the show. Like, you're the captain of the scout team. Make sure everybody gets it together, you know, this and that. And so, because that's what makes teams really good, is that if your scout team doesn't perform, I mean, then your starting five is not going to perform either, because you have to reenact every single little detail from every single play that your opponents are going to run. I mean, there were times I was playing, you know, a post player who shot left-handed, and I'm a right-handed, you know, shooter, and I couldn't shoot left-handed hooks really well, but I had to find a way to make it happen. And so,
yeah.
So there were times I had to play really tough roles, but anytime I got to play the role of Jared Sellinger or any type of five big man who shot threes, like, I really enjoyed that, because that was the only time I got to shoot threes in practice. But, you know,
yeah.
Just the fact that walk-ons, you know, in my opinion, I've always said this, walk-ons and managers have the most important roles on any teams in college athletics in general, because obviously, because walk-ons need to make sure the scout team and that they prepare the starting five and then the second five off the bench. And then the managers are the ones that make sure the film gets together. They do a lot of behind the scenes stuff that nobody really sees. And so, you know, and that's why I have so much respect for our managers that graduated with me or graduated after me, or the current managers, that their job is something that not a lot of people can really handle and balance, because it's a lot of film work. It's a lot of late night hours, and they are the guys that really make that program go.
Well, I want to say this before Tyler jumps to the next one. This is amazing, because, and Tyler will love this, I have to say this before he goes to the next one. I had that situation where, and I was at Western, and the coach yelled at me because I was playing like myself, and I was not really allowed to do that because I was supposed to play like a gentleman named Green was his last name. And our coach says, "What's your last name?" And I'm like, "File." "No, it's Green. You're right-handed. You're not lefty anymore. Shoot the ball with your right hand. Do what he does." So the walk-on job, I mean, you got to bring it. I mean, you got to play like the other team. Anthony Hamill said it best. When I was a walk-on at Michigan State, I didn't even know who I was anymore. I had to play like every single guy on the schedule. I had to play like the Northwestern wing. I had to play like the Ohio State two guard. I had to play. It's a tough job. That scout team thing, you're absolutely right, Anthony. It's so important. That's why Michigan State's a great program. You know, he makes you guys bring it to the next level just like everybody else. And then, hey, also, you're ready. You're ready to go in if you're called on. So that's just great. That's great stuff.
Yeah, Anthony, I kind of want to talk to you about one of the, I don't want to say a problem, but one of the more puzzling pieces for Michigan State this season. You know, everyone kind of expected Aaron Henry to jump into that third star role, and he's had his issues. And to me, it seems like when the game speeds up, he's every bit as dangerous as any other player on the floor, not named Cassius Winston. You know, he can finish with both hands, he can drive, he can shoot, he can post up. But it seems like when the game slows down and they're forced, and Michigan State's forced a little bit more to push into their half court, and he doesn't see that lane where he can just take one dribble and get to the hoop, it seems like he overthinks things. How does someone, correct that? Or am I just misinterpreting it entirely?
No, I don't think you are, Tyler. I mean, you know, one of the things that, you know, great players do in order to correct those situations is, you know, watch a lot of film. And, you know, and I know for a fact that, you know, a lot of guys who come through Coach Izzo's program, whether it's Draymond, whether it's Denzel, whether it's Brandon Dawson, Miles Bridges, like, if there are games that they have off nights and they need to figure out why, you know, they go back and watch film, because the film doesn't lie. You know, if you think you're playing harder than you think you were and the film shows otherwise, well, you're going to get corrected on a few things, because like I said, the film doesn't lie. And so, but the other thing is too, is like, I don't think anybody expected Josh Langford to be out again for a whole year. And I think people had the idea of, okay, Aaron Henry is going to play the role of Josh Langford, and then, you know, Josh will be back, and then Aaron will be back in the role he was in last year. But now that Josh is not there, you know, the pressure's on him a little bit more to produce. And so, and I think it was, I think it's a confidence thing too. And right now, the last few games, he's starting to get his confidence back just one step at a time. And as long as he continues to do things that the good things he's been doing, like rebounding and playing good defense, then he's going to be just fine. The shots are going to fall. They're going to fall. Like, we've seen Aaron Henry go off in games before. So, you know, as long as he knows that he's a good – he's a great player. As long as he knows that he's a great player, he's a great shooter, he's a very good defender, as long as guys on the team keep reminding him that, he's going to be just fine. And so I think the more important thing for him is just to, like, not listen to the outside noise and just worry about what's going on, you know, in that locker room, in that arena, and what goes on in his life as well. Because those are the only things that should matter to a basketball player.
So this game, Anthony, obviously is a big deal. I mean, Michigan comes into town Sunday. You know, we've had some guys say some great stuff in this rivalry. I thought Divided We Stand, the documentary, was great. You know, Tyler and I, we grew up together. The hatred for the other side is real. Juwan Howard obviously is taking over this Michigan program. He's done a pretty good job. He's recruiting well. This game always brings something extra. Do you remember times, because so many guys have documented their moment where they're like, yes, this is when I knew I couldn't stand Michigan, or this is when I knew I couldn't deal with those guys wearing the maize and blue. Did you have a moment where you were like, yeah, this is different, this is Michigan, I don't like those guys? Did you remember like a time when it first hit, or was it just like ingrained in you and it was from young age on? I mean, I think Tyler had a disdain for me this week, probably since third grade. So, you know, when we go to class together and I'm saying something to him smart, you know, there's a lot of stories me and Tyler could go on and on about this. But was there a moment for you as a player at Michigan State, or even before that, where you're like, yeah, I can't stand those guys?
You know, for me, it's been ingrained since I've been to East Lansing as a kid. Because my father, you know, my father was in athletics at Michigan State for over 25 years. And so, like, I lived the rivalry as a kid. Like, I've been around both fan bases. But, you know, I know my mom has gone to Michigan football games in Michigan, in the Big House, and she was spat on in those seats before by Michigan fans. And so, like, I've heard stories about what my family went through when they went to those games. You know, about 3/4 of my father's side of the family are Michigan fans. Like, I've had to hear all the trash talk and all the dirt from them whenever we lost in football or even basketball games. And so, and then when I got to read more about the Fab Five and, like, you know, some of the things that they were doing on our court, and it's like, you know what, like, That's when my disdain for Michigan really kind of took over, was when I really started to learn more about the Fab Five and, like, everything that went down with them and just, like, how their fans treated our fans. And so, and I know that there are Michigan fans out there, and I'll say the same thing about our fan base too. And, you know, that's what makes a rivalry. And but obviously the Mike Hart little brother comment stuff is what really, you know, got me on edge too. And the funny thing is, guys, is that That all went down when I was at Grand Valley State. Like, I had no connection with Michigan State during my time at Grand Valley State. And here I am.
And you guys beat Michigan State, by the way. Were you on that team that beat Michigan State? I think you were, right?
I am 1-0 lifetime against Coach Izzo. So I've
always right. How about that, Tyler? How do you like me now, Tyler?
but like, even when I was at Grand Valley State, like, Grand Valley State had their own version of a Go Blue chant. I never said it. I couldn't do it. And again, I had no ties to Michigan State, you know, at that time. You know, there were times where coaches will call me, you know, personally to, like, encourage me during tough times at Grand Valley State, but that was it. But, like, you know, did I root for Michigan State when I was at Grand Valley? Absolutely, because of my dad. But, like, whenever that Go Blue chant was going on at Grand Valley State, I was like, no, I'm good. So when I got to Michigan State, the rivalry was already ingrained in me. Like, the disdain for the school in Ann Arbor was already in me. But then once I started to play and be involved in the rivalry, you know, the practices leading up to that game were intense, and I'm sure they'll be intense in the next couple of days. That's when I knew, okay, this is real. like, yeah, I was a fan all those years, but now that I'm a part of it, this is real. Like, Coach Izzo gets after it. Like, during Michigan week, he turns it up to a whole different level. It doesn't matter if it's 2 days preparation, 1 day preparation for the game. Like, he turns it up to a whole different level that you've probably never even seen before. Like, he's just so intense, more than he ever has been. And so, but losing to them for the first time, my redshirt junior at home, when Stu Douglas hit that three in the corner to go up four with like 11 seconds, that's when I knew, okay, I really cannot stand these guys even more, because they were on our court celebrating. And then we lose the next two of them. It's like, all right, like, enough's enough. Like, I'm tired of losing to Michigan. Like, we need to go out and just beat these guys. And that's when Draymond single-handedly out-rebounded them at home the next game. And so, but I mean, as you guys have seen over the years, you know, when it comes to both football and basketball, like, just the fan, both sides of the fan base, it's been ridiculous, in my opinion. Just like, yeah, there's a time and place where you talk trash and then you take it to a personal level. That's the thing, guys, that kind of, like, upsets me a little bit is, like, you know, if somebody was trying to trash talk Michigan State to me and then I brought up stats about basketball for the last, you know, year or whatever, oh, we were 3-0 against you, and then somebody tries to take a shot against my family because it's Michigan State, it's like, do you really have to go there? Like, you know, come on now. But, like, you know, the rivalry, I think, in itself has definitely gone up a notch the last 10 years. And that's definitely a huge compliment to, you know, not just Coach Izzo and Coach D'Antonio, but it's a big compliment to John Beilein too. Because Beilein, you know, I mean, as you guys know, there were years where he went three, four wins in a row against Coach Izzo, and then Coach Izzo got him back, and then it was the other way around. But what I loved about Beilein was he did it the right way. He did it the classy way. And he never talked trash about Michigan State. I don't think he ever said one bad thing about Coach Izzo, because those guys respect each other so much. And so, and I think that's why the rivalry was fun when I was there too, because there was respect on both sides. And now, you know, I'm good friends with Jordan Morgan, who played in Michigan. And so when you leave the rivalry, you definitely see a different side of people who you thought, oh, man, like, I don't like this guy. Or I didn't like Jordan Morgan at first, but now I love him because he's a good guy once I got to know him. And so – but that's what's so cool about this rivalry is that you're rivals with guys who you thought you'd never be friends with. And then once you graduate and grow up and become adults, like, you know, you become good friends. And so, I mean, granted, there's still friendly trash talk between me and some of those guys on that team. But, you know, that's what makes the rivalry fun, you know, in the long run. So I'm excited to see, you know, what goes on this Sunday.
All right. Yeah. Hey, Anthony, we got to let you go here really quick. You have a bet with Jordan Morgan?
Not this year. That's only for high school bets. I can never make a Michigan State bet with Jordan Morgan.
And you got a prediction for this weekend?
I mean, I think Michigan State's going to come out, play good defense, and I'm going to take Michigan State. I'm going to go Michigan State 78, Michigan 66.
All right. Hey, Anthony, thank you so much for coming on. You know, we really appreciate it. We're looking forward to all the big things coming your way in 2020. You know, obviously – we'll be in the loop following your social media, and you know, we'll be sure to have you on next big thing that goes down for you. You know, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show, man.
Thank you guys for having me. Take care. All right.
All right. Thank you, Anthony. Again, that was you know, former Michigan State Spartan, Anthony Iani. He's obviously got a lot of great insight to a lot of great things.
Oh, that's awesome. You know, having Anthony was great. And again, Tyler Hayward comes through in the clutch again. We always get the great Spartan former players to join us. And it's always fun, you know, and it's a fun rivalry. It just really is great stuff from Anthony. Besides all the stuff that he's went through and you know, now coming out of the book and all his inspirational stuff. I love when he talks the games too, man, and the rivalry. I mean, he really, really hits it home. I mean, it's still in him. He has a great way of talking about the games. You know, Tyler, you mentioned he loves talking football. We'll have to talk football next year with him for sure. But, yeah, I'm excited about this game, Tyler. I mean, let's just, before we, you know, we got 5 minutes. I really think the prediction was pretty good from what Anthony said. I really think Michigan State is going to get after Michigan. I think Michigan's going to struggle. I don't think Isaiah Livers is going to play. It's weird because I think he's going to be out for an extended time. They're not really saying it. But anytime you hear that indefinite injury, what do you think? You think what Joshua Langford, what they were saying about him. So I think they're shorthanded. And even though Michigan State's shorthanded, they have more depth. And we knew this would be the problem eventually, Tyler, that Michigan doesn't have scoring depth. You lose one guy who's your scorer, wow, now you're in big, big trouble. I think Michigan State's going to absolutely destroy Michigan this week, and I think it's going to be ugly. I think they played fantastic last night. That's the way Michigan State wants to play on defense. Now Bingham is getting shots out of there inside. You know how much I love Marcus Bingham. I mean, I've been talking about him long enough, and it really came to a head yesterday. I think this is going to be a 15-20-point win for Michigan State. I really do. Juwan Howard gets to find out what it's like to be in this rivalry. My prediction, Tyler, I mean, I think it's going to be 71-52. I think they're going to just crush Michigan. Everything Michigan has that's an advantage in other games will not be an advantage this game. Xavier Simpson will not be the best point guard on the floor. John Teske's going to have big guys that can defend him inside. The guard positions, Michigan State's better. This is going to be a situation, again, where Michigan will have a pretty decent season. But, man, it's scary when you lose Livers. I mean, if Livers plays, I still think Michigan State wins. Not playing him out, Tyler, there's just no way.
Well, look, I've said that Michigan's always had those guys that can step in. I know we got like 2 minutes. I'm going to try to make this quick. And, you know, if we need to, you know, we can get in touch with this more on another episode before the game. But, look, I think Michigan's guards, you know, they can be a handful. And they can be a handful for Cassius. They can be a handful for Watts. From the deep defensive perspective, I think Gabe Brown is one matchup where – you know, if David DeJulius gets an opportunity, he needs to try to use his strength and try to bully Brown, take away that height. You know, it's like a boxer with a short reach. He's going to try to get inside and take those body blows, and I think that's something DeJulius may need to do. But that being said, you don't have a guy – Michigan doesn't have a guy who can stop Tillman. And it's really that simple. You know, he embarrassed Kofi Coburn, who – you know, has been one of the best bigs in the Big Ten for my money. And he, I mean, Teske can obviously stop him, and Tillman's not your traditional post-up big, but he can do a lot of other things. And I think that's really going to hurt Michigan, especially when they can get him out on the perimeter and get Teske out on the perimeter with him.
Yeah, there's no question. You know, there's no question this is a matchup where – and Michigan State is really starting to click. I mean, if you looked at them defensively the last few games, they've really played well. I thought last night they were outstanding. I mean, if Michigan starts off the game like Illinois did yesterday, oh, boy. I mean, and this lineup with Gabe Brown, Henry on the wing, Cassius, you know, who is a solid defender who picks and chooses his spots. He's very handsy. And then you look at what they have inside with Bingham and Tillman. Michigan's had moments, Tyler. They've had a hard time scoring, and I think that's what's going to happen. So, again, I really think it's going to be a 71-52, maybe 70-56 type game. You know, what did Anthony say, 78-66? Very, you know, the teens to 20-point range. I really think that's what's going to happen. And it's at the Breslin Center. And let's be honest, Michigan has not had a lot of success there. I mean, I can only think of two wins, the Stu Douglas shot and Nick Stauskas blowing kisses to the wonderful Spartan fans. But, yeah, I think this is going to be ugly. I really do, Tyler. I can see it coming.
Well, I hope you're right. But, hey, that does it for us here on the Trouble with the Snap podcast. Thank you again to Anthony Iani, a former Spartan, great, joining us, doing lots of big things, you know, since he graduated Michigan State, and he's about to blow it up this year for sure. You know,
he's great, isn't he? Gosh, he's great. Anthony's great.
Absolutely. Oh, easily one of my favorite interviews. But, you know, for Jeremy File, I am Tyler Hayward. This is the Trouble with the Snap podcast.